Dr. Milos, thank you so much for joining us today on Galesburg Live.
Absolutely, Chris. It's exciting to be here with you.
I appreciate you taking the time. You're a busy person, of course. But here we are, February. It's American Heart Month. And who better to talk to than one of our great doctors here at OSF?
Thank you. Thank you.
It's still, heart disease is still an epidemic here in the United States.
It certainly is. You know, Chris, more than 600,000 Americans die from heart disease annually. That's staggering numbers. And the reason that we're here today to talk about the Heart Month is to create awareness and create an opportunity for people to stop and reflect about their own lifestyles, about what perhaps they can do themselves to improve their overall quality of life and minimize their risk for heart disease.
That's right. It's just a reminder, here we are in February, to say, have you thought about your heart health? And what are some of those things that you can do as you're thinking about, what can I do to make my be a little healthier, to think about my heart more?
Absolutely. Things you can do include lifestyle modifications, such as exercising maybe 3 times a week, you know, for 30 minutes, eating a balanced diet, minimizing refined carbs, and eating fresh fruits and vegetables and eating the right foods. Also attempting to minimize your level of stress or have some stress relief activities to decrease the level of stress, because heart disease is multifactorial. There are many things that really impact heart disease or contribute to it. Also, if you do smoke cigarettes, stop smoking cigarettes. If you vape, stop vaping. If you drink alcohol, either stop or drink in moderation, because all those factors influence and impact one's heart and potential heart disease.
Right. At what age do you typically start to see heart disease in an average person, adult?
With our lifestyle and our diet that we have here in the United States, and also the increasing amount of obesity and the younger people, we're seeing heart disease starting as young as 18 years old. Now, we're not actually seeing people with heart attacks at 18, but it seems like each year, and I've been practicing for over 20 years now in emergency medicine, it seems like each year the number of patients that we're seeing that are having heart attacks is younger and younger. You know, historically it would be maybe the 50 and 60-year-old crowd. Now we have patients in their 30s and 40s that are suffering heart attacks here in the United States.
Do you think that some of that, the younger adults, could be because of that sedentary lifestyle that they've had as a teenager, younger? I'm gonna bring it up. Video games, these little devices that we have in our hands right now that keep us from moving more. Right?
Yeah, that certainly contributes to it. Yes, absolutely, Chris. You know, when you think about what did we do when we were kids, we went out and we played, and we were outside the house running around chasing each other and our neighbors and our friends. But nowadays, with all the cell phones and video games and social media, people, the younger crowd, they tend to lead a more sedentary life.
And then it even affects us too. And I'm going to say binging TV shows on Netflix doesn't help sitting around for 5 or 6 hours on a Saturday when I could be a little more active, right?
Sure, absolutely, Chris.
What are some things that we can do? Because that's a lot. You threw a lot at us. We're going to talk a lot about that later on in this hour.
Sure.
But maybe if I just want to get moving, what are some things? You said 3 times a week. That's really all I need, just a little bit of exercise 3 times a week?
Well, that certainly is a good start. You know, 30-minute increments, or starting with 20-minute increments. Walking around the block if you don't have a treadmill, or if you have a bicycle, getting on the bicycle and riding around the block for 20, 30 minutes. Just those. It doesn't have to be a high impact, exhausting workout. It's just a matter of getting up and getting active.
Yeah. And then, of course, controlling what you eat. We're going to talk a little bit about that later on in this hour, but it could be as simple as just adding one of those healthier things to your diet and taking one of the maybe not so healthy things off, right?
Absolutely. Like just to stop drinking soda or pop, however you address it, and drink water or some other types of supplement other than soda.
I'd like to talk about you. Where are you from? Are you from around this area?
Yeah, I was actually born and raised in Rockford, Illinois.
Okay.
And I was born in OSF St. Anthony Medical Center.
I'll be darned. Yes. Okay. And how long have you been in medicine?
I've been in medicine a little over 20 years.
Why did you get, was it something that you'd always wanted to do?
No, actually, it's just something that sort of came a little later in my life.
Yeah.
After some other educational journeys.
Did you specialize in something or what?
Yeah, actually,
what was your interest in medicine?
I specialized in emergency medicine. I work in an ER.
Okay.
I love the every day is different. I get to meet so many wonderful, interesting patients. I get to save lives at times. I get to change lifestyles and impact patients in a very positive way. So I love what I do in the ER.
Dr. Milos, I've read that among the most stressful jobs that you could possibly have, emergency room doctor is right up there.
It is. It is. But I think I have the disposition and the ability to wrestle with the challenges and the stress, and I love it.
And you're seeing so many different types of things coming through, from the very minor things to the most serious you could ever have.
Yeah, we see patients with stroke symptoms, mm-hmm. with heart symptoms, sepsis, the whole gamut.
Yeah. I mean, you're saving lives, really. That's pretty amazing. You thank you and your team for what you do. How long have you been at OSF?
I've actually worked at St. Anthony's in Rockford from 2003 to 2007, mm-hmm. and then I went to a different health system. I started my role here at OSF St. Mary's, as well as Holy Family Medical Center in Monmouth, on January 1st of this year,
okay.
so a little over a month.
Yeah. So what does the chief medical officer do?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I've been charged with overseeing patient quality, patient safety, working closely with all the medical staff, all the physicians, to ensure that we offer the optimal care and patient safety for all our patients throughout the health system here.
For both hospitals?
For both hospitals,
okay.
yes. And I am most impressed. This is an extraordinarily talented team, mm-hmm. an extraordinarily talented and caring team here, from physicians, nurses, unit clerks, administrative team. The whole team here is really committed to offering the best care for our patients and community.
Yeah. Now, obviously, over the last 3 years, it's been some of the most challenging times that any healthcare professionals have ever gone through. You went through this, the whole pandemic, COVID, as a doctor. How are we coming out of this now?
I think that we're really coming out of it pretty strong. It certainly was a challenging time, especially back in 2020. It was quite challenging. But I think we're coming out very well and reemerging even stronger. I think we realize that we can get through anything. And us in the ER, we're just adaptable. And
yeah.
But what COVID sort of demonstrated is the whole healthcare system is very adaptable to any clinical scenario.
Yeah. Dr. Glenn Milos is Vice President and Chief Medical Officer at OSF St. Mary Medical Center in Galesburg and OSF Holy Family Medical Center in Monmouth. During the pandemic, the other local hospital closes down. Suddenly, OSF is taking care of the health needs for an entire region. You're in the midst of this, too. How are the mission partners doing in the midst of all this, now that it's been over a year?
We're doing very well. We're energized. We're committed to all our patients and to the community. We're being very innovative on how we can wrestle with and address and work with the increased volumes that we're experiencing. And we feel blessed to have this opportunity to not just care for a part of the community or a segment of the community, mm-hmm. but the whole community, as including the region, like you pointed
right,
out.
Right, right. And as your experience in ERs, we're hearing ERs are just, it's full of people. The urgent care places are just full. What would you mm-hmm. recommend to someone who they've got something going on with maybe themselves or a loved one? When do I go to urgent care? Help us out, because I don't want to sit in emergency room waiting room for 3 hours waiting to get in.
Sure.
What's happening here?
If you think your symptoms are somewhat minor, you have an earache, a sore throat, some minor type symptom, then I would encourage you to first go to prompt care or an urgent care here in town. Mm-hmm. But if you're having chest pain or shortness of breath, severe abdominal pain, those would be reasons to come to the emergency department. The challenge is getting the right patients to the right venue.
Yeah.
And those patients with, let's say, upper respiratory type infections, toothache, those can be cared for in the urgent care or prompt care, and save the emergency department for the patients that are more sick.
And things are getting better. Things are improving.
Yeah, it's true. We are sorting things out. We're being innovative on how we can better care for patients and more patients at once, and really spending a lot of time and energy strategizing on what can we do best for all our patients.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're hearing of patients sitting in hallways, things like that.
Well, this is the challenge. You know, you mentioned that the other hospital in town closed about a year ago.
Yes, sir.
And we have 13 beds, 13 rooms in the emergency department. And when you nearly double your volume of patients, but you still have 13 rooms, you make do, and you do the best you can. And if you have to put patients in the hallway, that's better than having them sit in the waiting room, not even being cared for. So we're being innovative. It's not ideal, but we make things work.
Right,
because
we
care about our patients. And I will say that we're on top of this. We're being very proactive and working on how we can increase the number of rooms. Mm-hmm. But that takes time. We would like to expand our emergency department so we have more rooms to care for patients. Mm-hmm. But everything takes time, and construction takes time.
The exciting opening of the new prompt care there at the other hospital ER area. How is that going so far?
That's going very well, and we refer to that facility as St. Mary's South.
That's for St. Mary's South, right.
St. Mary's South, and it's going very well. It's been well received by the community.
Yeah.
I think patients enjoy the prompt care, the quick care that they're receiving, and it's been well received,
Wonderful. And again, it's just another change that OSF made to help take care of the increased volume of patients and the need here in the area.
We are constantly reviewing our patient volumes and what can we do different, what can we do better on to better serve our patients.
Absolutely. And then, of course, OSF On-Call Urgent Care that was opened out at by Walmart just down here. That's recent as well. And I see that is I see lots of cars parked there too. So
again, that's been well received.
Yeah.
and patients love it there.
Congratulations on your new position here.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I must say that the reception has been so warm and kind, and the whole team here at the hospital at OSF, administrative team, the physicians, the nurses, all couldn't have been more receptive and kind and welcoming, and I feel very blessed to be here.
It's an exciting time to be in your position here at OSF.
A very exciting time.
Yeah.
And I think we're really doing great things, not only for our patients, but for the whole community and the surrounding communities.
Yeah. We're talking about Heart Month, and it's one of the leading causes of death in the United States, and it's something that you see here as an ER doctor that you see a lot, people coming in with whether chest pains or in a full-blown heart issue, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We're seeing patients with heart attacks, cardiac-type symptoms, shortness of breath, significant heart disease. So it's great to create awareness this month so patients can stop and reflect, what can I do differently with my current lifestyle to make things better for myself?
I shared off mic with Dr. Milos that I had a heart attack 4 years ago this year, and I have two stints. I had it at OSF St. Francis. The day that it happened, I didn't think anything was wrong. I thought it was heartburn. Dr. Milos, if I wouldn't have gone to the doctor, well, I got lucky. I just didn't go because I thought, if I go to the emergency room and they say I've got heartburn, I'm going to feel stupid. So I didn't. I went home and laid down.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, I went to the doctor a few days later, and long story short, they found out that I had an issue. But how often do you see that there are people just they wait till it's too late?
We see that all too frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And this begs the question about, when do I go to the ER? I would encourage all patients to come to the ER if they're having chest pain, shortness of breath, any types of cardiac type symptoms, crushing, pressure, squeezing, chest pain, shortness of breath. They're nauseated as well. Those types of symptoms. Men typically have those traditional type symptoms. Mm-hmm. Women can have maybe a little pain in their shoulder or a little pain in their neck or elbow pain. So I would encourage all patients to come to the ER if they think that they're having symptoms. We're not there to judge anybody. We never judge people. We never think they're stupid for coming. We just would encourage it's better to be safe, because I've had patients say to me, I'm sorry to waste your time. And I say, no, don't say that. You're not wasting my time. I'm grateful that you're here. Hmm. I'm grateful it all worked out, or your tests are all negative. But it's better to play it safe. So I would encourage everyone to err on the side of caution and come get evaluated if you're having any types of cardiac types of symptoms.
What's going on if you're having those chest pains? What is happening,
Dr.
Milo?
Well, what's happening quite often is there's a lack of blood flow through your arteries to a certain part of your heart, which creates the pain.
Yeah.
And then what can happen is the area of the heart that's not getting adequate blood supply, it just essentially dies. Those muscles and the cells just die because they're not getting the adequate blood flow and oxygenation. Mm-hmm. Usually it's caused by a blockage or a partial blockage of one of the coronary heart arteries.
I had a friend of mine who was around my age. This is 6 months after I'd had my issue. He was having chest pains, wasn't going to the doctor. Turns out they called it what they call the widowmaker.
Widowmaker.
Can you tell us what is that?
What they're referring to is the left anterior descending artery.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one of the main arteries that supplies blood to the heart. That's frequently the one that's clogged, and that's the one that causes imminent death.
Mm-hmm.
Any of them can cause imminent death.
Sure.
But that's usually the one that they refer to as the widowmaker.
Mm-hmm. He ended up having a bypass surgery during the pandemic, by the way. But luckily he went. So again, another adult male around my age in his 50s that didn't take the warning signs right away and could have ended up really badly. But now he's on the right track now. So when someone comes in with those chest pains, what's the first things you do for them?
Well, we do a very thorough evaluation, including an EKG, which it's an assessment of the electrical activity of the heart, and that will provide us with information as to whether the person is acutely having a heart attack as we evaluate them. It also gives us additional information regarding the heart. We also do blood work, which we assess the patient's heart enzyme to see if that's elevated. We do a chest X-ray, cardiac monitoring.
Hmm.
We give them medications, including aspirin, nitroglycerin. Sometimes we have to give morphine for the pain. So it's a very thorough, comprehensive, and that's just sort of like the starting point.
Yeah.
And then the next continuum, there's a large continuum. The next would be whether they get evaluated at the hospital for a cardiac stress test.
Mm-hmm.
When some patients need to be transferred urgently, like your friend, for open heart bypass surgery.
Yeah.
So we're able to we do a risk stratification, a thorough evaluation, and try to determine exactly what is the next step? Where does this patient need to be next? Or what kind of care does the patient need to receive
and
next?
And this is happening just within moments of you coming into the ER.
Yep.
That's right.
That's
how serious this is.
Very quick, yes.
That's right. Yeah. Dr. Glenn Milos is the new Vice President and Chief Medical Officer at OSF St. Mary Medical Center and OSF Holy Family Medical Center in Monmouth. And we're talking about Heart Month, and we're talking about how serious it is. If you're having issues, chest pains, and you had mentioned women have different symptoms than men.
Like I tell patients, you know your body the best.
Yes.
And you know what's normal, what's not normal. And when these patients that present, they know if something's wrong. And I just still remember when I was in medical school, they say that if you do a good history and you listen to the patient, they're going to take you right to where you need to be.
Right.
And so I spent a lot of time listening and sorting out and processing what patients present.
Okay.
But I would just strongly encourage patients to come to the ER if you're having these types of symptoms. Some cardiac patients just have back pain. It's like this gnawing back pain. Some have like a ripping, tearing back pain, and upper back pain.
Yes, sir.
And that can be cardiac. So it's best to play it safe and get checked out.
Could you talk a little bit about the cardiac rehab?
Yeah, that's a very important part of the continuum of care. And cardiac rehab, and attending that is very vitally important. Yeah. And that's sort of the new start of your lifestyle, where they're getting you doing exercising, whether you're on a bicycle, whether you're on a treadmill, and they monitor your heart and your vital signs while you're going through this therapy. And it's vitally important, but that's just the beginning of a change in lifestyle modification, and no longer having a sedentary lifestyle and exercising on a regular basis. Eating appropriately, de-stressing as much as one can in light of the stressful world that we live. You know, that's important, and whether that de-stressing includes yoga, reaching out to a higher power, enhancing your faith, all those are opportunities to really health and change your lifestyle.
Well, I'm talking about the cardiac rehab program that you have here at the state-of-the-art facility here at OSF here in Galesburg. They talked about all those things. They went through with me. It was a wonderful program. It really was. They talked to you about everything, about taking your medicine on time and make sure that you make these changes, and they're watching your weight. You know, I mean, they really did. It was a great start, a kickoff. But you're right. Then life hits, and we're still in the midst of with a lot of crazy things going on in the world. The thing that I found interesting is the health professionals talk to you more about your feelings, like emotions. Are you safe at home? Do you have feelings of sadness? Are you, can you talk about that? Is that relatively new over the last several years, right?
That's a very good question. It's more of the holistic approach, incorporating the mind, the body, and the spirit, and all are vitally important. So we've realized in medicine, and I'm an osteopath, so this is my core about treating the whole person and the mind, the body, and spirit, and that holistic approach. And we've identified in the medical community the importance of all those areas. Yeah. And that's why there is more discussion with patients about all those important factors, lifestyle modifications, weight control, diet, spiritual enrichment. Yeah. All those are vitally important in the whole picture.
Mental and emotional health, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
because you can help someone, after they've had a heart attack or heart issue, but if they go back to a lifestyle that is chaos.
And we're all faced with those, or not all, but many of us are faced with those challenges in life. And it's just, reaching out to the right people for help or guidance and support, because life is challenging and we all have our obstacles in life.
Right. Well, I think about men specifically. We're not ones to talk a lot about our emotions. So to have someone ask you, have you ever felt sad in the last 3 months or something? I can't remember exactly the questions they asked, but do you feel, depressed? It was a strange question to be asked. And I bet you get some weird looks from some people that look at you and go, what does that have to do with what's going on here?
Well, quite often I'll share with them that this is just part of our inquiry, because we care about you as a patient and because we're wanting to reach deep to figure out exactly what are the challenges that that we or you as a patient are experiencing, to try to drill down to that area. And sometimes we do get strange looks, or sometimes you get an immediate, I'm fine. Well, that usually is a red flag that maybe you're not fine. And the person needs to hopefully become more comfortable with me or another healthcare provider, so they're willing to open up so we can help them, because our focus is helping people.
Yeah.
Making them better, making them feel better, have a good lifestyle.
Yeah. Dr. Milos, I really appreciate the time that you've taken with us today, talking about American Heart Month and about OSF and about you. And again, some of those things that people need to think about when it comes to their heart health, making changes. We talked about diet, lifestyle, tobacco and alcohol use.
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah, if people would just stop smoking cigarettes or stop vaping, that is just such a detriment to one's overall health and cardiac well-being. Yeah.
Now, we've all heard about the smoking part, but the vaping part?
Vaping.
We were all, the idea was that, it's vaping. It's not as bad as smoking.
The vaping significantly adversely affects the lungs, and that is obviously integrally involved with the heart. So vaping, especially amongst our young yeah. population, is so high, and it's so detrimental. And it's new, so we really don't know the long-term consequences of vaping. But the studies so far show it's not good.
That's right. One last thing. We didn't talk about this for heart health. What has the effects been for COVID for people with heart disease?
Well, you know what's interesting? It seems like we've had an increased incidence of heart disease. I just think it's too early for us to know the adverse consequences of COVID on heart. But I believe it's multi-organ, multi-system effects from COVID. It's just too early. But I'm convinced, and perhaps I'll be wrong, but I'm convinced that, you know, in 5 years, 10 years, there'll be so many studies just indicating the significant adverse effects of COVID.
So much more to talk about when it comes to Heart Month, but we're running out of time. And thank you and your mission partners and everything you do here to help us here in this area, and everything that OSF is doing to continue to be the healthcare leaders here. We appreciate you.
Absolutely. We all feel blessed. I feel very blessed to be able to be a part of this wonderful organization and the delivery of this wonderful, optimal, awesome care that we provide our patients and community members.